First Up continues here on TSN 1050. It's the fourth hour, and what a collection of guests we have. Well, a fearsome duo. Keith Smith will join us. We'll talk some hoops at 9:30. Coming up right now, on the line, Mark Masters, one of the voices and faces of tennis here at TSN. Of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs reporter as well. A man who has many roles here. Another role as our friend here on First Up. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Good morning. Yeah, lots of hats.
Yes, lots of hats. That's what I meant to say. That's why you're the esteemed broadcaster and I'm sitting here in this radio studio, Mark. Let's talk about yesterday at Wimbledon. And we'll start with the bad. Felix Auger-Aliassime, someone who your contemporary Mark Rowe projected to go pretty deep in this tournament. He loses in the first round. What was your level of surprise to see that happen?
Mild surprise,
oh,
and I'll tell you why.
Mild, yes. Wow.
Sort of like the way we like our wings.
I like the medium, Carlo. Medium wings for me.
I'm a mild wings guy, too, and it was a mild upset. And the reason it is an upset, but it's a mild upset. This Maxime Cressy guy, he had just made the finals in Eastbourne. He's a serve and volleyer, very rare in today's game. He's got a 66'6", so he's got a big serve, and he rushes the net basically all the time. And it's almost impossible to pass him because he's got such a big wingspan. And when he's playing well, he's a tough out. He's playing on a career high. And just as I reflected going into the match on Felix's Grand Slams this year, it feels like he needs time to work his way into it. He had gone five at Roland Garros, had to come back from two sets to love down before beating a qualifier. He went five sets in the Australian Open, so in the first round. So it feels like he needs a little time to get in. So for me, this was just a brutal first-round draw for him because it felt like he needed just a little more time to work his way into the tournament and pick up some momentum. He did not get it at Wimbledon, and Maxime Cressy played well, and that was it.
So where would you rank this loss by, you know, Felix Auger-Aliassime? I mean, it's the first round of the Wimbledon, considering this guy went to the quarterfinals last year. I mean, this has to be a devastating result for him, no?
Yeah, but I think that because there's no points being awarded this year, it doesn't hurt as much. I mean, he was always going to lose those quarterfinal points. I think he's got a great game on grass. He had a decent grass court season leading into Wimbledon, but it's a weird year. It's a weird year at Wimbledon, and if you're going to lose in the first round, this would be it. And he's had a good run, right? He's made four straight Grand Slams where he's made the second week. So he kind of has built up some goodwill, and this is disappointing, no doubt about it, because he's got ambitions to win the tournament, and to go out in the first round is very disappointing. But I'm not going to jump on him too much because I think he's made a lot of progress this year. He's won his first title. He's had some good results. This is a setback for sure. What he can't let it happen is let it snowball in the wrong direction. Use this time. It's been really tough. When you're away from home, the clay and the grass, they happen right back to back. You're in Europe. You're far away. So now he gets to reset, come home to North America, have a good hard court season. So hopefully that's how he takes it, but I'm not going to jump on him too much for this one.
He was the sixth seed. Denis Shapovalov is the 13th seed on the men's side. He has a thrilling comeback victory in five sets against Arthur Rinderneck. Hopefully I said that right.
Very good.
What did you make of his performance?
Oh, man, did he need that. Oh, boy. Six-match losing streak. He hadn't won since May 12th when he beat Nadal, of all people, in Rome. He really looked out of sorts in the lead up to Wimbledon. He goes that he wins the first set 6-1. He looks like he's in good shape. He doesn't get broken in the second set, but loses in a tiebreak. He doesn't get broken in the third set, but loses in a tiebreak. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, is it all sliding away for Denis again? You talked about Felix making the quarters last year. Denis made the semis, probably playing the best tennis of his life. So you're hoping maybe coming back would light a spark, and he got it done. He got it done with the fans beside him. There's been behind him. There's been questions about his coaching situation. He recently announced just before the French Open that he wasn't going to continue on the trial basis with Jamie Delgado, who is Andy Murray's former coach. Instead, he's handed the keys to Peter Polansky, who is still technically an active player. Yes. Best known for being a lucky loser and making it into four straight Grand Slams after losing in the final round of qualifying and getting in through a lucky draw. But, yeah, he's coaching Denis. Anyway, so very, very interesting decision there, and it hasn't worked out in the last little bit. But he gets on the right track, and hopefully he can build on this because he'd been in a real funk coming into Wimbledon.
The human backboard, Mark Masters, joins us here on First Stop. And yes, Dennis struggled against your boy Carlo Arthur Rinderneck. Bianca Andreescu did not struggle too much with a 6-1, 6-3 win over Emina Bektas.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. What do you make of Bianca's chances to go deep into this tournament? She seemed pretty positive, pretty optimistic about her form coming in, Mark. What did you see in round one, and how do you see this playing out for her?
She looked great. She looked. She made the finals last week, first ever grass court final over at Bad Homburg. What a great tournament, the Bad Homburg Open. Anyway, she played good at the Bad Homburg Open, and she made the finals, her first final since April 2021 in Miami. So she's got momentum behind her, and she's won a Grand Slam. It feels like she's been around for a while. She's had like two different careers with all the injuries and the mental health break and everything she's gone through. That was her first ever match win at Wimbledon.
Wow.
But I know she has she has a game to play well on grass, an aggressive game style. She's been trying to go to the net more. It's actually funny, her first ever Grand Slam age was Wimbledon, because I remember how pumped she was to qualify many years ago, and then so much has changed since then with her winning the U.S. Open and having a lot of success on hard. So she seems like something's clicked for her. She's in a good mindset. That's what you want to see. She demolished a qualifier. She got a good draw, and she took advantage. And now hopefully she can build some momentum. Elena Rybakina, easy for me to say. See, you guys have been making me a little...
Rinderneck was a lot easier.
Rybakina of Kazakhstan, the number 17 seed, won't be easy, but I like her chances. I think she's in a good spot. And right now, just with everything where it stands and Dennis going through a bit of a funk, she's probably Canada's best bet for a long run.
Bianca advances to the second round. Serena Williams does not. She loses to Harmony Tan. That's an easy name to pronounce, Mark.
Yeah.
Harmony Tan, 7-5, 1-6, 7-6. And I don't know if there were any real expectations on Serena following her almost year-long, absence from the tennis world. But what did you see from her post-match, and what can we take away about her future in tennis? Because there have been some rumblings about potential retirement.
I am so, I'm split. Watching that yesterday, it's different emotions, right? On one hand, I was kind of like, it felt right to see Serena back on a court playing at Wimbledon. She had some moments where, the fiery competitor was evident, but it's tough to steer that way, right? She hasn't played in a year. And it just shows you can't just show up. And even if you're Serena Williams playing the 115th ranked player in the world in Harmony Tan, these are good players. And she just, the movement was tough. Afterwards, it's hard. It does seem like she is, there is some fire there. She does sound like there is interest in maybe the U.S. Open, and she needs to play more though, right? She can't just turn up, and the way she says it is, you never know when I'm going to pop up next. But with where she's at, it's impossible to pop up and expect anything. So hopefully she'll pop up at a few more tournaments and build some form heading into the U.S. Open where, the fans would be going nuts, and maybe she can get some, she can bottle some magic. She can have one of those last, because that's what we're all wondering, is she's got one last run in her, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's lost four Grand Slam finals since coming back from maternity leave. And does she have that one more spot? Can she do like what Pete Sampras did and win his final tournament at the U.S. Open or something to get to 24? I know we've invented this whole quest for 24 because it would tie Margaret Court. She's the best player. Like, courts, half of those Grand Slams happened before the Open era. So, but I don't know. It's hard. She's always been hard to read for me. And it was hard yesterday. It was nice to see her back, and at times the fire come out, and hopefully, I hope we see more of it. We move it forward here.
Mark, thank you for doing this as always. Great to have you on the show talking tennis, and my guess is we'll have you back on the show to talk some Leafs as early as next week with free agency right around the corner. Thank you, my friend.
It's gonna get busy soon here. It's exciting. Now finally we can get more into some Leafs talk, eh?
Amen, amen. I like talking Harmony Tan, but Jack Campbell, Ilya Mikheyev, and all the things surrounding the Leafs, interesting as well. Thank you, Mark.
I actually butchered the Harmony Tan.
Yeah, well, you did not. Did you pull
a
Matt
Cause? Too easy. I double clutched
Harmony.
It.
Harmony.
I double clutched it because it was too easy. Anyway,
it happens very infrequently for you. Not like us here. We butcher names all the time. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Mark Masters covering Wimbledon for us here at TSN, and he'll be covering the Toronto Maple Leafs very closely with free agency 2 weeks away. I wanted to ask, what was up with the kind of the patches that Serena was wearing on her face yesterday? I don't know if you saw that. I didn't get any clarification on that.
I didn't, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe we'll look that up during the commercial break. We'll report back on the other side. And we wanted to play a little snippet of yesterday's interview that we had with Andrew Cogliano, Stanley Cup champion. We've had a number of people texting in, tweeting in about that interview. Got some great response on that conversation. So we'll let you hear a little bit of that. Plus, Keith Smith, who covers the NBA with free agency tomorrow. I mean, it should be a wild day, as always. Jalen Brunson, secure that bag, my friend. It looks like he'll do that with the New York Knicks. That's all coming up on First Up in our fourth hour. The parade in Denver, Colorado tomorrow. The Avalanche. Oh, boy. The liquor will be flowing. Coors Lights, MGDs, champagne, maybe some Hennessy, all of the above for the Colorado Avalanche. And you imagine, well, we know for the last 48 hours or so, that's exactly what's transpired. Yesterday on the show, we welcome in Andrew Cogliano. Carlo, your buddy from back in the day, he is a Stanley Cup champion, traded to Colorado before the deadline from San Jose. And we began by asking Andrew how he's feeling and a response that you'd expect.
Oh, all good, guys.
That sounded like a guy that has not got much sleep. What has the last 48 hours been for a Stanley Cup champion?
You know what? It's been, it's been great. I think I just feel like, I was saying to my wife, like, it's almost like your body's just in another, you know, it's in a state through these last 2 months of just, you know, physical warfare, but also mental, where you're just, you know, so focused, so dialed in, you're just in your routine that all of a sudden you're done and the body just, it wants to shut down on you. So, but just amazing emotions the last couple of days. And, you know, obviously talking to a lot of people, getting a lot of texts, and not a lot of sleep. So just trying to catch up now.
So what's the plan right now? You guys are back in Colorado. You've celebrated the night in Tampa. You're probably celebrating throughout the day in Colorado right now. You know, are you guys still planning on partying? Like, when does the sort of the line get reached here of, you know, party central?
It was after the game. We had we got back to the hotel late because the game was so late. So we had a good kind of night there with family and friends, and obviously had a great time in the dressing room after the game. And you know, that was
you pulled the Hulk ripping your shirt off. You just wanted to show everybody how jacked you were, right?
You know what? I just was like, it was just a moment where just awesome. You know, the dressing room was something that's I think one thing you'll just never forget about this whole experience. But we had a little bit of a night last night, and then we have our parade tomorrow. I think we have our we go to the rink and take pictures, and our families will come and kind of take some formal pictures, and then Thursday's our parade, and then Friday I think we'll have a big night and, you know, have a good weekend, and, you know, then go from there. I think I got a couple young girls and we're in apartments, so I got to get them out of here to get her to her like place at some point.
Our guest is Andrew Cogliano, Stanley Cup champion with the Colorado Avalanche. And I can reintroduce you as many times as you want as a Stanley Cup champion.
That's got to feel good.
I'm sure you love
hearing that. The goosebumps. I just feel the goosebumps coming off.
You mentioned the parade, and there's been some famous parade moments over the years. I think Brett Hull with St. Louis following their cup win, Corey Crawford, Jonathan Quick. Is there one teammate of yours, Andrew, that you're a little bit concerned about that could take it a little bit too deep and maybe use some profane language?
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll see if Nate can fly off the handle. He's a he's a little bit of a wild card, and I think he's in a state right now where you know, obviously he's been dialed in and focused and
I think
he's got to let it loose a bit. So Cale won't. Cale's pretty dialed in, so I'm sure he'll be all focused still. But no, it's, you know what, I'm really excited to kind of celebrate with these guys. Just a great bunch of guys. We had a great team. Just in terms of, you know, not only on the ice, but great personalities, and I would say one of the closest teams and some of the best guys I've met in hockey. So I don't think it's surprising that we were able to win. I think when you have that off the ice, I think it translates on the ice.
Well, Cogs, I want you to elaborate on that a little bit, because, you know, after you guys won, almost every interview that guys had were complimenting, you know, the group and how special it was that this group won. But one of the guys that was getting almost all the compliments was you. And rightfully so. People that don't know you, you're one of the best guys to be around, you know, very professional about everything. But you came in as a trade deadline acquisition. How important was it for you to come in and really find your foot and you know, make allow this team to understand why you were there and the importance of having a guy like you around? Because, I mean, you heard it from every player complimenting the significant role that you played in the championship and in the group.
Yeah, you know what, I think it was kind of a situation, you know, obviously it was a great opportunity for me, you know, first and foremost, like, and I was grateful for it. You know, at the end of the day, I was coming in a situation where I knew how special this was, the opportunity was, and I wasn't going to, and I had the mindset I was going to bring value in any possible way. If that was in the lineup, if that was out of the lineup, if it was hurt, if you were hurt, if you, whatever the situation was, I just simply said I was going to bring value in any possible way to help this team win, because that was the mindset I had, and I know that was where, you know, their heads were at. This was a very driven group the second I got here, and you could see it. You could just feel the energy with the guys that they really wanted to win, and they wanted to do everything possible. But, you know, I think it was a very seamless kind of transition. I think they didn't have a lot of veteran guys. I think they had guys that maybe were in the league here on this team specifically for a long time. You know, Darren Helm was here, an older guy. But I think
Helmer,
they added a little,
he's an undercover. Yeah. He's an undercover guy that can get crazy tomorrow too.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, yeah, that's a good point. But you know, and I think I just, you know, added an element of, you know, experience that maybe the team didn't have. And, you know, I've been told that, you know, it was just a sense of calm, and, you know, obviously I have experience with, I never won a cup, but I played in a lot of playoff games. And, you know, I think there was moments during the playoffs that, you know, simply having that experience helped. And I think guys watched me a lot. You know, I think they watched kind of what I did and how I prepared and how I approached the game. And you know, I will say I was fully invested in terms of sacrificing myself to win. And, you know, I think I blocked more shots this playoffs than, you know, honestly, I have in maybe a couple of years, to be honest. And, you know, I think when you have a guy like me that with my mindset was just, I'm just going to do whatever I have to do to win, that, you know, that goes a long way when guys are watching. And, you know, younger guys are watching a guy like me basically do everything possible and play through some injuries. And you know, I think it just created us a good feeling with them. And, you know, it's nice to hear them say that. I think that's, for me, that's the one thing that I'll probably take from this run and this championship, is I played a role and I helped those guys, and I was a significant part in, you know, helping them do this. And that's a great feeling.
What a stud Andrew Cogliano is. I can only imagine. I know you've been texting with a number of your former teammates and coaches on Colorado. Expect a number of big guests coming your way next week. No pressure, Coco.
Hopefully.
No pressure.
Hopefully. If these guys are in the right form, I mean, they might need a week off after this celebration of partying going on for the next week.
There's not like a radio equivalent of winning the Stanley Cup. Like, you have an amazing show. Mark Masters, Xavier Scruggs, Dave Poulin. We just have a parade to celebrate ourselves.
I thought yesterday's lineup was a Stanley Cup edition.
I think we have Stanley Cup editions all the time. Rod does a fantastic job.
We had Burrows. We had Cogliano. Yeah. We had, what was the day yesterday? Tuesday? CJ?
Yeah, it was great.
Buster. Like, come on, indeed. Tuesday.
No, I mean, I think we should have a parade to celebrate first up. That's the Bricklayer Invitational.
Parade?
I don't know about parade. I don't know. Well, we could do a parade. I mean, today not a good day for a parade in Toronto. It is currently raining.
It is expected
to really pick up steam as well. There is a storm a-coming here in Toronto.
No golf for you.
Yeah, well, this afternoon I was supposed to play, but looking not ideal conditions.
Not the best.
Not the best. Louis Domingue. You know what is the best? Keith Smith from Spot Rack. He joins us next. We look ahead to NBA free agency at midnight tonight. That's on the way here on First Up. So we're in studio today here on First Up. Karolnik and Koliak. In order to go to the bathroom, you kind of need to hustle over there because it's not exactly around the corner and need to do a little bit of a sprint, at least a fast jog. And I'm doing that just now. And the floors were recently mopped. I completely wiped out.
The cleaning crew.
Completely wiped out. I look around. Nobody saw me. Thank goodness. Because that would have been very embarrassing. I also could have just shattered my legs in every single direction. Fortunately, I'm all good. Fully intact.
So,
which is surprising.
I'm glad you said that because I stepped outside too and it's raining as well. And it brought me to a moment that happened on Sunday for me where I was about to go into a Shopper's Drug Mart, but it was like sunny skies outside, but pouring rain. I was wearing my sandals. I took two steps into the Shoppers and literally almost buckled blew out my knee.
Oh, no.
I'm thinking to myself, is that a lawsuit if I slip and fall?
Are you going to sue Mother Nature?
Inside the store.
Oh, inside the store. I thought you said it was raining.
Yeah, but I walked into a Shoppers.
Ah, well, I don't know. The good folks at Loblaws, they got some money up for their legal team. You might
Shoppers, not Loblaws.
Loblaws owns Shoppers,
you're right,
my friend.
You're right. You're right.
Take that.
Yes.
All right, we'll delve deeper into Canadian retailers on the other side. But for now, we welcome in Keith Smith, who covers the NBA for Spot Rack. What's going on, Keith?
Quite a bit. It's the busiest time of the year.
No kidding. Well, let's start yesterday. Russell Westbrook opts in to his $47 million player option with the Lakers just one day after Kyrie Irving opts in to his $37 million player option with Brooklyn. If you had to pick one of the two to be more likely to be on a different team to start next season, who would it be?
I think I'd still go with Kyrie Irving. I don't think it's very likely for either of them to be on a different team to start next season, but Kyrie Irving's just a far more tradable player. He's a better player than Westbrook, and he makes far less on a contract than Westbrook does, but I think they'll both probably be right where they are when next season tips off.
Well, Keith, let's dive into the Kyrie Irving situation because it was a very heavily debated topic with, you know, his situation this year, opting in, opting out, sign and trade, Lakers, Nets, Clippers, however you want to, you know, lay it out. Do you think he just walked into a scenario where he tried to use his leverage as maybe getting a max extension or seeing, you know, what the rest of the league thinks of him and finally realize that there wasn't the attention that he decided and just decided to take $37 million to return to the Nets?
I definitely think there's some of that in there. I also think Kyrie Irving is, one of those guys who, it's kind of like, remember when you were younger and you'd go and you'd buy something and then you'd be, maybe this still happens to you now, but you'd buy it and then you'd get home and you'd be like, oh, man, I want that instead. I shouldn't have bought this. I think he has remorse in that way where, maybe this would be better. Maybe this place will be better. I think he's a guy who's searching for his own basketball happiness where he's going to be able to play basketball and also be very happy, and I think he gets kind of caught up in these things. But I think there was a leverage play out there as well to see, like, hey, who wants to, get me on a full new max deal, because I think the Nets made it pretty clear that that's not something they're interested in.
My guess is this time tomorrow, Keith, that Brad Beal is very happy. Sounds like he's going to opt out of his player option and sign a new monster deal with Washington that could make him the highest paid player in the NBA. My question is, who is Washington bidding against so as to give Brad Beal a five-year max extension? Is there another team in the NBA that would give him anything close, Keith?
Not right now, but mostly because they don't really have the ability to. That's the challenge in this market right now. The teams that have cap space, they're not going to be places Bradley Beal wants to go, or teams that necessarily are in position to do that where they're at in their developmental curve. So I think what you're looking at, though, if you're Washington, is it's not necessarily about giving that money to him right now. It's about what happens in a year or two, because if you said, we're not willing to go there, where we want to do less than the max, then what happens is Bradley Beal maybe says, all right, well, I'll opt out and I'll force a sign and trade somewhere, or I will opt in, but then next year I'm definitely leaving, or something like that. It's these contracts are not always just decisions in the moment. Sometimes there are decision-making processes that come into play that are 1, 2, 3 years in a window that you're looking at.
We're joined by Keith Smith, and Keith, the big news coming out of yesterday is that Jalen Brunson is about to be a very, very rich man from the New York Knicks. The Knicks clearing cap space to present him with a 4 or 5 year deal somewhere in the range of $100-110 million. Jalen Brunson, you know, was a guy that played really well in the playoffs in Luka Doncic's absence, but do you think he's capable enough of leading a franchise like the Knicks as the number one point guard?
Yeah, we're looks like we're going to find out. Just to be clear, too, it'll be a four-year deal, because if you're signing another team's player, you can only give them 4 years. You can only get 5 years if you're re-signing with your current team. But in this situation with Brunson, I think what we're going to see is he the guy that led Dallas to a couple of wins in the playoffs when Luka Doncic was out? And is he the guy who can kind of not only lead your offense as a playmaker, but be the fulcrum as a scorer as well, and a guy you really feel good about building around? And if that's what you think he is, then that's a, you know, $25 to $30 million player, if you believe that. If it's less, then we'll see. But 25 to 30 million, people are getting a little too crazy, I think, about the number.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot to pay a guy to get him to change teams, and that number still only puts him about somewhere in the 12th to 15th highest paid point guard in the NBA.
John Wall, I guess previous to being bought out of his contract, was among the highest paid players in the NBA. He apparently is on his way to the LA Clippers as early as tomorrow. What do you think John Wall still has left in the tank at this point in his career, Keith?
Yeah, I think anybody who's expecting him to be, you know, John Wall, all-star, all-NBA guy, you got to take those expectations away, and I don't think that's what the Clippers are looking for, too. But I don't think he fell off from that to shouldn't even be in the league. And that's what he's going to be paid by the Clippers. Like, they're going to give him their taxpayer mid-level, which is about $6.5 million. And he's going to come in there as, ideally, probably at least, to open the year, their backup point guard. So I think that's perfectly fine. I think if we're talking giving John Wall a $20 to $30 million a year contract, well, that's ridiculous because we haven't seen him play in a year and a half. But if you're only paying this guy, you know, enough to, you know, kind of come in and be your backup point guard, you're perfectly fine. And the Clippers have enough depth and they have enough resources that if it doesn't work out, they'll just move on and move on to the next guy.
NBA free agency less than 48 hours away. And if you want to get all the lowdowns and the scoops on the NBA, make sure to follow Keith at Keith Smith NBA. Probably one of the easiest Twitter handles to read on the radio. So thank you for that, Keith, and thank you for taking the time this morning.
I'll pass those thanks on to my mom for giving me a nice
Very simple. That is Keith Smith from Spot Rack. amongst other publications. A great follow on Twitter. 103,000 Twitter followers. I aspire to be like Keith Smith one day. If my FanDuel best bets are any good, maybe I can get to that type of Twitter following. And it is now indeed time for today's best bets, brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. We're back in Alek Manoa and the Jays. Whenever Manoa pitches at home, he gets the job done almost every single time, and I don't think tonight will be any exception against the Boston Red Sox. Here's how we're playing it. A same-game parlay. Manoa to strike out at least four, and the Jays to win on the money line. You've got Shohei Ohtani on the hill against the Chicago White Sox tonight. Michael Kopech, who's great at home, but subpar on the road. I'm back in Shohei Ohtani. He'll probably strike out 10, maybe a couple dingers tonight. Safe assumption there.
See the monster home run he hit yesterday?
Oh, just a...
Mashing balls.
Yeah, he's so good. That guy, I still think, is the MVP of the American League. Sorry,
Andrew. I really want the LA Angels to make the playoffs.
Me too.
Just
me
so
too.
We can watch hot too. Trout hot and too. Ohtani play at the best time of year.
Amen. Kyle Wright starting for the Atlanta Braves as well. In my final pick, he's on the road in Philly. Wright, a K machine on the road. We're going to take him over 4.5 strikeouts. Today's best bets have been brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Got a very nice email from our friends at FanDuel late last night. VIP customer.
Nice.
Both the first up boys. VIP at FanDuel. And
does that mean we go to like the special events that they host and stuff like that?
I look forward to that if that is indeed the case.
And, do it. You know,
maybe we do first up live on location. I mean, is there a FanDuel golf tournament maybe we could go to?
That'd be unreal.
Maybe who would be in our foursome? Maybe Frankie Corrado could join
us?
Out.
Okay. He's out. Okay. Him and Phil, they're out.
Well, Phil Archie could join us. Come on, we love Phil.
Just kidding. Of course they can play with us.
Okay.
But think about a FanDuel tournament where every hole there's a wager to be made.
Wow, you are a genius. That might be the smartest thing you've ever said. Yes, something like...
You've got to.
You have to make a bet with the house.
Something.
And then somehow like the odds are, you know, on the website.
What's
the
score you're going to record on this hole?
Oh, I like over-unders. Like for you on every par three, over-under 5.5.
Potentially, yeah.
Nah, you're right.
Par threes are my worst. Man.
You fire darts.
Told you, the most comfortable club I have in my bag is my driver.
Yeah, I am the exact opposite. Unless our friends at Golf Town can make a significant adjustment to my game.
They've tried.
They have tried and they have failed. I need to figure it all out. I thought I was going to play some golf today, but not the case. It looks like it's raining. So
yeah,
that's too bad. That's too bad. Anyways, I need to get to an appointment.
Okay.
So I am going to... hand the baton to you. And if our audience is wondering how this show would sound with Carlo Colaiacovo hosting, they're about to find out for one segment and one segment only. Maybe a Rod will chime in. 20 fingers. Are you going to be participating in the final segment?
We should do a trivia challenge. I just don't see it happening.
Trivia challenge. Yeah, I think that would be good. Dude, you got 5 minutes. I'm sure you could figure out something to talk about. And I also want to make sure I wish you a very happy anniversary as well before I go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for reminding me. Appreciate that.
You a reminder. Come on, you have flowers, you have chocolates for
Gina. Why don't you just tell everybody what I'm gonna buy my wife? It's supposed to be a surprise.
Oh, I didn't realize that was actually the case. That was an assumption. Maybe go to Golf Town, gift card for her. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Well, I hope it's a great night.
That's where our dinner is. We're gonna do dinner and shopping at Golf Town.
You're gonna go to Rattlesnake for dinner and then go over to Golf Town at what street was that Golf Town on? Somewhere in
Appleby.
Burlington. Appleby, yeah. So anyways, I'm out of here. I'll be back tomorrow, 6 a.m. Carlo, a Rod, 20 fingers will take you home here on First Up.
Oh yeah, step up to the plate. The plate or party? Party. Step up to the party. Well, welcome back here to First Up. It is 9:47 and we are about to embark on our final segment of the show, and I've got our producer, Arad Asfandi, joining us. And Arad, I'm not sure what your plans are tonight, but tonight, I know where I'm going to be dialed in at 7, I think it's 7 p.m. Eastern, and that is to TSN watching the Memorial Cup Final between the Hamilton Bulldogs and the host, St. John Sea Dogs. Darren Dreger retweeted last night that the St. John's
crowd will be completely sold out tonight. That's got to be an unbelievable game to be a part of if you have a chance to be part of it. I followed the CHL playoffs all through the finals as I did it, covered it through TSN. I've watched as much as I could of the Memorial Cup, but tell you what, man, I'm cheering really hard for this Hamilton Bulldogs team. I think they've got what it takes to pull it off. One of my former defensemen, Jay McKee, is the coach there. Steve Staios, great hockey guy, GM there. So go Bulldogs tonight. Go Hamilton.
From what I gathered, they dominated the regular season.
They did.
But they stumbled once the Memorial Cup tournament started.
So they had an unbelievable regular season. They rolled through the playoffs. They went 12-0 getting to the finals. And then they encountered a seven-game series against the Windsor Spitfires. And I think that took a lot out of them emotionally, winning that Game 7 at home in dominant fashion. And then getting to Memorial Cup, I think what really set them back was their first game was against the St. John Sea Dogs, the host. That team hadn't played in like 6 weeks because they got eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. And I just don't think they were ready to play at that level of emotions that St. John's playing. And they just couldn't recover. The next day they played the Shawinigan Cataracts, a team they beat in the semifinals last game in the overtime. So they got a big win in the last game of the round robin against the Edmonton Oil Kings. I can't believe Edmonton's out because they were one of the teams I had pegged as the favorites going in. But that's the thing about a short tournament like the Memorial Cup. Like, you have to start on time, as Mike Babcock likes to say, because if you don't, you can find yourself trailing, and then, you know, a couple bounces here and there, you find yourself out, and next thing you know, Hamilton, which was 0-2 and needed to win in regulation against Edmonton, got the big win, and now they carry that momentum into the finals. So this is definitely going to be a fun one to watch tonight if you get a chance to watch it.
And for fans like me who have not kept up all season, are there any players you have your eye on?
Well, definitely on Hamilton, Mason McTavish. He's a stud, third overall by the Hamilton, by the Anaheim Ducks. And think of the year that he's had. He played on the Olympic team. He played on the World Championship, or the World Junior team. Played in the NHL. Now he played in two teams in the Ontario League because he played in Peterborough first and then got traded to Hamilton at the deadline. So he's definitely a guy, NHL prospect, you definitely want to watch. And St. John has some big players on their team as well, too. I don't have the list of players on the top of my head, but the one player on their team scored 4 goals the other game. Again, I'm drawing a blank, and you probably wouldn't know either. But, 7 p.m. tonight on TSN. It's the finals. Sorry, 7 p.m. local time, which is Atlantic time, 6 p.m. Eastern time on TSN.
Nice and early. Perfect for us.
Yes. Absolutely perfect for us. So that's my plan tonight. I'm not sure what you have planned tonight. Care to share?
I'll be watching the Memorial Cup as well, but with one eye on my phone. One, because I'm a millennial and that's just what we do.
That's what we do, buddy.
And two, because it's NBA free agency tomorrow,
yes,
which is one of the most exciting off-season days, I would say, on the sports calendar, because you never know with this league.
Well, you don't. And that's what that makes the NBA so exciting to watch, is that, you know, look at the names we're paying attention to this year that we never thought would even be on the market. I mean, now that Kyrie has sort of opted in, but the last couple of days it's been Durant, it's been Kyrie, it's been Russell Westbrook. And they always, you know, the NBA free agency always has the eye on the heroics, the dramatics, the sort of out of the blue sort of situations, and the money that these guys are spending and making. It's just, sometimes it makes you want to puke some of the money these guys are being handed, but that's what makes the game what it is, right? It's the buzz around it. And I'm not sure how many movers and shakers they're going to be this year, because some of the big teams that you expect don't have cap space. I mean, you talk about the Lakers and the Clippers, but some way, somehow, if they want a player, they always find a way to make it happen. But I guess a team that me and you will probably have a lot of interest in is the Toronto Raptors. What do they do? We had Bobby Webster on last week, and he even, you know, led us to believe that they're probably not going to be that active in free agency, more in the trade market. So we'll see what type of trades these guys can muster up to help improve their team.
Their free agency work looks like they're going to focus on their own free agents, bringing back Chris Boucher and Thaddeus Young.
Right.
Which is, I mean, it's good for them, right? Young started rocky, but by the end of the season, he was a big part of that rotation. He's a great versatile player that fits the Raptors' mold. But yeah, the eyes are going to be on the trade market. And the biggest name, I guess, is Rudy Gobert.
Oh, man. I'd be all over that if I'm the Raptors.
He fits the need, right?
Yes.
Exactly
center.
What he needs. Yeah.
Center that can shoot. For sure. Mid-range game.
Center that can shoot and a very good defender.
Very good. Nick Nurse would salivate having a guy like Rudy Gobert playing his defensive schemes.
Exactly. And, like, you know, it is true that you don't exactly need that center defender anymore, but the Raptors are in the same division as the 76ers.
Well, you don't need that one-dimensional center.
Correct.
But if you can get a guy that's very versatile and, you know, play, you know, many options like Nick Nurse likes to likes to create with his offensive schemes or defensive schemes, I think he fits the bill perfectly. And if he's a guy that's available, Utah just hired their new coach yesterday, young 34-year-old from the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, Will Hardy.
Will Hardy.
Be the same age as Mike Connolly.
Right. So that'll be interesting to watch, too. But look, and the Jays, they're back on the schedule again tonight. It's Manoa on the mound, and we know his success is at home with the Blue Jays, and can they get the sweep? So even though we are in the dog days of summer, at least we've got some fun things to pay attention to tonight.
Exactly. The dog days haven't started yet, right? Like, once the free agency in the NBA and the NHL dies, that's when the dog days really start.
Right, and we're going into what is usually anticipated as the most exciting weekend in sports. I mean, July 1st is when free agency used to kick off, and obviously with the season being extended this year because of COVID, it's now July 13th, so exciting weekend, you know, with July 1st, that they'll have the NBA free agency. We'll have a lot of rumors and a lot of buzz around NHL moves in the coming weekend. So that'll be fun. And you're off vacationing this weekend, too. That's I mean, questionable choice, if you ask me, to travel on a long weekend, especially with how big of a mess the airports are. But I'm happy that you get a chance to get away.
I love traveling. It's my favorite thing. And this is a trip I've been planning for a very, very long time. You're right. A lot of stress with all the flight cancellations.
Oh, my God. It's the worst. If I had to sit in an airport with delays that lasted 7+ hours, I'd absolutely lose my mind.
It's the worst because you have nothing to do.
Nothing.
Just got to look at your phone and entertain yourself to the best of your ability.
And maybe take a nap on, like, those are the floors if they're clean. And hopefully your luggage is still...
You put your luggage under your head.
if it arrives wherever destination.
If it arrives and doesn't get stolen.
You're going to. So, well, hey, good on you for taking that chance. To hear that you love traveling, I'm surprised you haven't lived in Europe. I mean, I know you grew up, or you were born in Iran, I believe. And
correct.
Dude, the European lifestyle for travel is incredible.
It's so different.
It's so, you can get anywhere in Europe on a train.
On a train or on one of their cheap flights?
Cheap flights. It's awesome. Yeah, it's absolutely awesome. Well, thanks for filling in here for AK, killing off this last segment of the show. We had a great show today. If you missed it, you can find it on the podcast, on the
Spotify,
Apple iTunes, wherever you find your podcast. And we'll be back tomorrow. It's me and AK joining you on First Up at 6 a.m. So on behalf of me, on behalf of Arad, on behalf of AK and Christy Averro, we say ciao.
Okay.